The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
We're going to be in Cape May tomorrow live for our next and final and last show of the year with some great guests. I want to see you there in Cape May. So join us for that tomorrow, 3 to 7 p.m. at my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. All right. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli if you'd like to weigh in. Joining me now, Doug Kelly is CEO of the American Edge Project. And you can follow him on X at Doug Kelly. Hey, Doug, thank you for making time today on the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. First of all, tell us about American Edge.
Sure. So American Edge is a coalition of about 24 different groups, right? And we advocate for American technology leadership, especially against China, because we are in a neck-and-neck dogfight with China to be global tech leader. And they're a strong opponent, and we have to be able to win this race.
All right, we do. I agree. We have to. What are the stakes if we don't win this race? Because everybody says that we have to win this race. What are the stakes if we don't?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I want to make it really clear for your listeners. Technology is not neutral. In it is contained a country's values. So American technology is built on our core values of freedom, of opportunity, and empowerment. China's technology is built on censorship, surveillance, and control. And those things are embedded in their AI system. So as if you're using a Chinese AI model, you ask it a question about what happened at Tiananmen Square, it will lie to you and say, nothing happened. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was killed. Mm-hmm. You ask that to an American AI model, it's going to tell you the truth. Unvarnished, right in your face. And so that's just one example. Like, there's other examples of the dangers of Chinese AI systems. So if we don't win this race, we face national security threats, we face economic competitiveness threats, and our values are at stake. So it's high stakes, and we got to win it.
Okay. Now, as we look at America's data center, you guys have done and figured out here where some of the growth hotspots are, and Axios had a piece on this as well. America's data center growth hotspots mapped. And did you do the mapping to figure this out from the American Edge Project?
Yep. Great. We mapped out for every single state how much investments they're getting in AI, how much jobs that's creating, what's happening with data centers, and how that ranks. And we did that because a lot of the AI debate is about, oh, no, we can't have all these data centers. Well, if you think of data centers as the manufacturing, the new manufacturing of America's leadership, then we wouldn't say, hey, we don't want more manufacturing companies. We want more data centers because that's the future. That's how we power our ambitions. That's how we power new cures and diseases. That's how we power all of our future ambitions. And so if we don't build them, we're not going to be able to have them. And if we don't bring them the right amount of energy, we're going to fall short of our goals as well.
What is a data center exactly? I mean, we hear the term. We can kind of picture something in your head, but is it just a place with lots of filing cabinets?
No, but kind of. It's a digital giant filing cabinet. No, it is. First of all, data centers have been around for more than 50 years in this country. They're not a new thing. Just the size of them is somewhat new. But they've been around, right? So they host a lot of sophisticated computer equipment that saves data, that saves files. So a company doesn't have to host all of their sensitive data in their company, in their headquarters. They can use it at a data center. It can be there. Powerful AI chips can be embedded into a data center. So companies are just renting them. They don't have to buy their own. These are our AI factories of the future. And AI is the single most transformational technology that we've had in the last 100 years. And it is going to benefit this country. So we have to be able to have these essentially AI factories all around the country to be able to run it and to power it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We absolutely do. And then how do we power them? Because I was talking earlier about a story, I guess, Energy Secretary Chris Wright came to Three Mile Island. You know, they got that reactor back up. The CEO of Constellation Energy was saying it was a mistake to mothball it in the first place. So how do we power these data centers?
Yeah, so that's a great question. First, we have to be agnostic about the source. We have to say we need an all of the above approach. We want nuclear, we want geothermal, we want coal, we want renewables, we want every single piece of power that we can use to make sure that we're powering these data centers. And the reason why, it's not just data centers, right? We have a lot of other electricity needs, right? President Trump's trying to bring back a lot of manufacturing jobs from overseas. That requires electricity. People are buying a lot of electric vehicles, right? That requires electricity. Quantum computing is the next thing on the horizon. This is super fast computing that does things millions of times faster than today. That requires a lot of power. So all of our ambitions of how does America power itself to be the global leader in everything is dependent on whether we can power data centers. Because if we don't have enough, we're going to fall short. And here's the challenge, Rich, is that for three decades now, report after report after report have come out from the federal government saying our grid is inadequate, we don't have enough energy sources of generation, and we got to fix this. Well, the people who own the grid and the people who are the utility companies didn't take that moment to say, hey, we got to get serious about this. We got to create more generation power, as opposed to taking a bunch of it offline and opposed to not really, you know, if you think about it as kind of telephone lines, right? Not having good telephone lines between different regions so you could move power from one part of the country efficiently to the other part that, say, may have a data center that needs a lot of electricity. We can't let a fragile, outdated electricity grid thwart our future ambitions, period. Like, we didn't stop building the interstate highway system because we ran out of concrete. We made more concrete, and as a result, we're safer and more secure. We have to do the same with AI.
Doug Kelly's with me. He's the CEO of the American Edge Project, and we're talking about America's data center growth. And so let's talk about our region for a second here. So New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, where are the data centers around us?
Bing bang. You guys are doing great work there, I got to say. I haven't combined them all, but I'll just give an example of Pennsylvania, right? So Pennsylvania ranks number four in the country in new data centers, with 184 new data centers coming online. Now, remember, you already have 100 of them right there. So you're basically going to double it in terms of data centers overall. Those new data centers are going to create 365,000 new jobs, temporary and permanent ones, and it's going to raise about $1 billion in state and local tax revenue just from those new ones. Now, that's revenue that can be used for police protection, fire protection, investing in schools. Pennsylvania also has 11% tech job growth, that in part due to AI. Like, that's double the national average of growth. So the technology footprint that Pennsylvania has done is incredible. Similar with Delaware, right? I mean, Delaware has a great is bringing on 11 new data centers, but they're big ones, right? They're big ones. They're going to create a lot of jobs, and it's going to generate about $2 billion in state and local tax revenue. In New Jersey, you've got in New Jersey right now, there's about 82 data centers, 12 more are going to come online, and it's going to create about 23,000 jobs. So your area of your listeners, like, there's a lot happening here. And it's not, and it doesn't just benefit AI, right? When you have a data center around there, you have colleges then build a stronger workforce to, become workers at the AI place. It then triggers all different types of AI curriculum from colleges of students who want to learn and grow. But it also, and here's the kicker, Rich, these things to build, they take a lot of workers who are iron workers, electrical workers, HVAC technicians, plumbers and pipe fitters. These are skilled labor jobs, and right now we have deficits of roughly 550,000 skilled workers across the country. You just can't create 550,000 blue-collar jobs with a snap of your fingers, right? It takes time. But this is a great way for, let's say, the three states you talked about, to say, hey, how do we build partnerships between the tech companies, between the federal government, and with our states to say, we've got this opportunity with kids who may not want to go to college, who are looking to do something meaningful, and have a great paying job going forward. This is a great training opportunity to say, let's make it our mission in this state to create 50,000 new electricians by X date, or 25,000 plumbers and pipe fitters by this state. Good, respectable, honest jobs that not just help these data centers within the state, but you can basically have guaranteed employment anywhere you want across the country. But it's also for other things in your community too, right? There's things that happen besides AI that they're needed for. So AI is our modern day moonshot moment in this country. Just in the same way when President Kennedy said we're going to the moon and back with AI, we can say, look, we're in a dogfight globally, competition-wise. We can use this to kind of mobilize our country towards a shared mission of innovation. We can use it to mobilize our country to create a new type of job of AI in the future. And we can use it to mobilize and create new jobs that have always been around, but people are retiring and not going into the trades anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not even talking there about the benefits of AI. These really powerful AI systems are being used by scientists to identify and cure new diseases, to speed up how medication works, to improve diagnoses. When you get a funky looking MRI, right, and you're not sure what it is, and doctors are struggling with it, and it can be customized education for your kids to do better in school, as well as helping retrain and upskill your average 30 to 40 year old worker to say, hey, what new opportunities do you want to do? So this is an exciting time. As Americans, I think sometimes we've lost the confidence that we've had in the coming out of the war in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. Like we knew how to build it. We weren't afraid of it. We did it.
We met the challenge head on, Doug Kelly. No doubt. But I'm gonna play devil's advocate. Not that I believe this for a second. I think it's pure BS. But Bernie Sanders yesterday was going on and on about how he wants a moratorium on AI because he's worried about how it's going to hurt our kids, hurt our workers. And then we've also heard other people say things like, we have to make sure that AI isn't racist, whatever the hell that means. I mean, you know, you have a lot of people that are actively right now scaring people and saying that AI is going to lead to, when my kid, my son's 11, he won't have a job. There won't be a job for him because AI is going to make it so that there are no jobs.
Okay, so on the job front, on every breakthrough technology that has happened, whether it's electricity or the internet, there were doomers who said it's going to cost so many jobs, it's going to wreck all of these existing industries, and it's going to, you know, kill the American worker. Guess what happened? It increased productivity, it increased wages, and it created a whole new set of jobs that people are thriving in. That's just the empirical facts of this overall. Yeah. And so we can't be afraid to say, hey, look, we are, as a country, we have led the world in every innovation overall. We invented artificial intelligence. And now we're not going to hand it over to China like we did with our manufacturing edge. And that's exactly what we did. Politicians didn't protect what we valued, and it cost millions of jobs across this country and damaged communities in a way that is almost indescribable. But we have this AI moment now where we have a slight lead, but China has more energy, they have more adoption, they have more workers than we need. We need to be able to fight and solve for those gaps that we have, because this can be our modern day moonshot moment that just that strengthens us as a country for the next 50 years and makes us have a national security advantage and an economic competitiveness advantage, as well as spreading our values across the globe.
Well, I also think, I mean, whether whether we seize the opportunity or not, it's happening, right, Doug? So, right. I mean, you know, you could say, all right, let's put a moratorium on AI. Well, China's not going to put a moratorium on AI. So, I mean, it's such a stupid concept to turn around and go, oh, let's put a moratorium on AI. That sounds great. As if other countries around the world or private investors or our enemies are going to do the same and be like, oh, great, we'll all put an AI, a moratorium on AI. We just won't move forward with this. I mean, it's an idiotic thing. Somebody made a great comment. It was actually my wife who said this. She heard this at work. She said, you shouldn't be so worried about your job being replaced by AI, but what you should be worried about is your job being replaced by somebody who knows how to use AI in their job to do better at their job. And I thought that was a very, very smart comment. And look, I'm learning more and more ways that I can be a better talk show host and a content creator using AI. I think it's an incredibly exciting time for this right now. The one thing I would say for all of us is we just have to figure out how we can apply it in our daily lives in a way that benefits us right now. And there's an intimidation factor like anything else. I mean, you brought up the internet earlier. I'll bring up the time when we all didn't know how to program our VCR clocks. You know, you got to, like, I mean, we just have to figure out how to use it. And I think, you know, we know ChatGPT. We know how to put in right. something there. Right. I have friends who plan vacations on that. But I really think that there for just the average American consumer, it would go a long way to winning support for this if they understood, okay, how does this help me right now, here and now, and why I shouldn't be afraid of it?
Yeah, I think two things on that. One is there will be a lot of benefits to working class families, both from, you know, customized education for their kids, disease cures, disease diagnosis, et cetera. Those are like the larger things. But in terms of the getting used to it and doing it, right, I'll give my dad as an example, right? He's 83, and I call it the Bob Kelly test, right? He was very skeptical about AI, and I said, Dad, listen, you're a great electrician. I'm going to pull up my browser here for ChatGPT. I'm gonna go ahead and ask it your toughest electricity question. And he, like, banged it out, and he was very happy that this thing was not going to get the answer. 5 seconds later, it had three different ways to solve that problem, and he's like, yeah, that's pretty much right. So now he's a super user of artificial intelligence at 83 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, what he really needed was he heard stuff in the media about AI. So that was kind of his first moment of truth about it. And he didn't really know what it was. But then when he went and explored it, he had a second moment of truth about it. And he realized, holy cow, this is going to empower me to do much more than I ever have before. I don't have to go look at a manual how to wire this. I don't have to, you know, I can use it to plan my garage, plan my vacations, right? And it unlocks and gets rid of a lot of the drudgery work that people have to do in their daily job. And so I would just encourage your audience, don't listen to what people are saying. Go find out for yourself. Use some of these tools. They're all free. They're all free. Go see what they're like for you. Ask it a question. How could I best use you to help me? Here's who I am, what I do. Bam, it's going to give you 10 reasons or 10 ways it can help you and start exploring it. And once you do that, then all of a sudden people become evangelists about this. And that's what we need. We need excited people talking about how is AI going to change your lives and not just having a media narrative or a political agenda drive it. Let's find out for ourselves.
I like it. Doug, listen, come back on the show. This was really informative. I learned a lot. Doug Kelly, CEO, American Edge Project. Follow him at Doug Kelly and check out AmericanEdgeProject.org. Thanks, Doug.
Hey, thanks so much. Take care.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. So let's see. What do we got? We got Cape May tomorrow, and that's 3 to 7 p.m. We're excited about that. And the big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Venaria, Venaria Dental. We're finding out now more and more common dental health issues may hint at more dangerous medical conditions. The American Heart Association warning of a connection between periodontal disease and cardiovascular problems. This was a Fox News story that I saw today. saying gum disease and poor oral hygiene can allow bacteria to enter the bloodstream, causing inflammation that may damage blood vessels and increase the risk of heart disease. So you got to see a dentist and go see Dr. Mike because he's the best. VenariaDental.com. All right, do that today and you'll be on your way. And you'll feel good. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back. We got more to come. The president today reclassifying marijuana, and that's a good thing for research purposes. But does that mean that Big Pharma is going to get their greedy hands all over it? Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Excuse me. I got a cough, Justin. It's not going away. I'm telling you.
I did see, I think it was Fred's sister-in-law said, coughs do last. Like, she still has a cough from Thanksgiving, so.
Yeah. They last, for sure. No doubt about that.
It's quote-unquote sick for, like, what, a week-ish now?
I'm not sick.
Quote-unquote sick. Like, you were sick before, like, after.
I had, like, a 48-hour bug.
Fair enough. Okay. But you've been coughing for like a week.
Yeah, right. I had a little bug, and then I got rid of the bug, but now I still have the cough because that's what happens. So, I'm okay.
Do you figure out where you think you got it from? One of the kids?
Of course, they're disgusting, germy little miracles, little petri dishes. That's what they are. They're always bringing home something. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it's impossible not to get it because when your kids are sick, they need mom, they need dad. You got to comfort them. You got to, you know. And it's just, you know, you hope that whatever they have, you've already had so that your body doesn't get it. But, you know, I mean. So Dr. Nick DeNubley told me to up my vitamin D3 levels, so I'm upping my vitamin D3 levels, which we probably should all do in the winter since we're not getting any friggin' sunshine, you know?
At least it's not, like, terrible. Like, I know the sun goes down, but at least it's today, and I think tomorrow, it's not going to be terribly cold because...
No, but it's going to rain tomorrow.
Oh, God, is it?
I heard that. I don't know if it's true or not, but...
Oh, my God.
It's always sunny in Cape May, though. I know that. But no, but Justin, you got to get your vitamin D levels because otherwise what happens is, you know, you get the seasonal depression and then you want to jump in front of a locomotive. You know what I mean? So you got to make sure your vitamin D levels are strong. Got to do that. Has to be done. So, let's see. We got President Trump trolling other presidents with plaques. We got that. We got the marijuana thing. Actually, let's do the marijuana thing because people may not have heard that earlier in the show. They may just be getting here because we've been on the air since 3 o'clock. Crazy. We've been on the air for 3.5 hours. So why don't we remind everybody about what he did earlier, Justin? What do you think? Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me.
And we'll take a nice long toke. So the president today announcing that he's signing an executive order to schedule marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 as a controlled substance, Cut 1.
Today I'm pleased to announce that I will be signing an executive order to reschedule marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 controlled substance with legitimate medical uses. We have people begging for me to do this, people that are in great pain. For decades, this action has been requested by American patients suffering from extreme pain, incurable diseases, aggressive cancers, seizure disorders, neurological problems, and more, including numerous veterans with service-related injuries and older Americans who live with chronic medical problems that severely degrade their quality of life.
And he went on to say that this is, we'll jump down to cut number, where is it now? This is cut number 26. No, I'm sorry, cut number 25, Secretary Kennedy, why they're doing this. It's a scientific question. We got to now research this and see the benefits that we can get out of this. Cut 25.
I'll just echo, thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for your leadership and vision and finally getting to closure on this issue. This is a question, a scientific question, that has divided our country for many, many years. And there are valid claims on both sides. On one side, patients and physicians attest that this, that cannabinoids and THC can be miraculous effects on chronic pain, on epilepsy, on PTSD, on chemotherapy-induced nausea. My friend Howard Kessler, without whom we wouldn't be here today, has drove this change in the schedule. But he did it because of his own experience in mitigating the impacts of chemotherapy. There's nothing to gain from this. He just saw something that worked for him, that worked for thousands of other Americans, and he wants to make it available to them. On the other side, there are valid claims about the negative impacts, about addiction, about psychosis, about adverse public health impacts, and impacts particularly on young people. So we haven't been, the evidence on all of these is anecdotal and it's hypothetical because we have not been able to do scientific studies. There is no standardized dosing. And if you don't have standardized dosing, any study that you do is comparing apples to pears. And we don't know the difference between botanicals and synthetics, and all of these questions we're now going to be able to answer. Five administrations have promised to act on this issue. The Biden administration promised to do this, and the proposal began during the Biden administration. It got mired down in the chaos and inertia and disorganization. And I want to thank President Trump, who made the promise during the 2024 election that he was going to come in and solve this issue, that he was going to take decisive action. And he has kept that promise today. And so thank you, for President Trump, for your vision. And because of that, we will have answers very soon. This will finally allow us to study this issue and to answer these questions for the American people.
Good. That's what you want to do. You want to answer these questions for the American people, and that's what you want to do. And that's what we have to do, because we owe it to people who are suffering with all kinds of different chronic issues and PTSD and everything else. And that's what needs to happen. So I'm very happy about that. Very happy. Now, the president put up these plaques which troll other presidents. And there was a video posted to social media where Caitlin Collins is very, very unhappy about this. I can tell you a lot of people on our side are unhappy about this, too. I was watching The Five earlier today, and Brian Kilmeade was saying he's not a fan of this. I'm not a fan of this either, to be honest with you. I think it's the kind of thing that's going to come back to bite us down the road. And, you know, if a Democrat gets in the White House, I don't know what they're going to do. But I'm just, this is not, you know, exactly what I would do. But I'm also not going to, like, lose my friggin' mind over it. Trump trolls. It's what he does. A lot of people don't find it presidential. You know, I mean, the guy is who he is. He's not changing who he is. He's just going to keep doing more of this. We're only in year one. We have three more years of this. But he put things under, like, Sleepy Joe Biden, by far the worst president in the history of America. He called out George W. Bush, actually, saying that he started the Iraq and Afghanistan war, two wars that never should have happened. For him, it's all about, you know, he's the master troller. And, you know, a lot of people think, all right, this shouldn't happen in the White House now. He won. Be magnanimous and, you know, be presidential. You could say whatever you want. You can wish, but wishing doesn't make it so. This is who Donald Trump is. I do know, though, that one day the Democrats, if they're ever back in charge, will then probably do something to mock him in a big, big way, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe they'll just take it down and act like it never happened. It's kind of hard to say, but Caitlin Collins is very, very unhappy with these presidential plaques. Cut 14.
So these new plaques have just been added to the so-called Presidential Walk of Fame. They almost read, some of them, like Truth Social posts, including the ones under President Obama's that says he was one of the most divisive political figures in American history. Under President Biden's, it describes him as Sleepy Joe Biden and also says that he was the worst U.S. president in history. There are some that are nicer, including under Ronald Reagan's, for example, where President Trump says at the end that he was a fan of Trump's long before he ran for president. The White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says the president actually hand wrote some of these plaques himself.
Now, the only thing that I have a problem with, really, is truly, is that he doesn't really go into detail about... he said Bill Clinton had scandals, but he doesn't really go into the fact that the scandals involved an intern and a stained dress and a cigar. Because I feel like if you're going to go all in, you got to go. You got to just go all in. You know what I mean? You got to go all in. But the media is having a hell of a time fact checking this, as you can imagine. And if you... And that's exactly what Trump wants. He wants the media to fact check this. He wants the media to obsess about this. It's what he does. And it's, you know, I mean, it's not going to change. I'm telling you right now, this is what he does. This is who he is. So I think we all know that. I want to read the one that he wrote about Roosevelt, because I want to find out if he mentioned the internment camps for FDR, which ended this week, by the way, in history. Because I saw that on Michael Pelka's show prep, a little bit about that. If I were president, would I do it? No, I would not. I would not be doing it if I were president. But that's me. I'm not president. He won. And, you know, that's what he does. And he has great fun doing it. So I'll put it to you this way. If the plaques keep him from starting a war with Venezuela, I can live with it. I'll survive it, and you know we'll all survive it if the plaques keep us out. And most people won't see the plaques unless they're actually invited to the White House, and most people won't get a chance to do that unless they're probably already on his team. So they're only going to see it if they're invited, and it's they're walking through that area of the White House. It's an exclusive invitation, so you're probably already on Team Trump. The only reason why this went viral in the first place is because they put it out there in the public. And, you know, again, but look, there are certain things I wouldn't do either if I were president. I wouldn't have a UFC fight on the White House lawn. But like I said, I'm not president. So I'm just happy that last night he didn't announce that we were invading Venezuela. He announced that we're giving money to the military. I can live with that. I think we all can. So on that front, I'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. More to come. Tomorrow is Cape May, 3 to 7 p.m. We'll be there live. Don't miss it. It's going to be a great show. We'll have fun together because that's what counts. We're together, baby. We got to be together in person. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, so we got the Eagles game on Saturday at 5 o'clock, Eagles-Commanders game. Why are we playing Washington on Saturday, Justin?
This tends to happen towards the end of the college football season. Normally, college football games are like reserved for Saturday, but because they're in their bowl season where games just happen pretty much 6 to 7 days a week, the NFL finally gets their slice of the pie and says, okay, we're going to start putting games on Saturday so they can get more of that spread.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Because there's one tonight. I think there's one tomorrow. Couple Saturday, couple Sunday. And so they kind of like want to spread the exposure.
How are we going to do on Saturday?
I would like to be positive, even though they got rid of the positivity rabbit. Hopefully it's in a landfill somewhere.
They did get rid of the positivity emotional support rabbit.
Yeah, hopefully it's in a landfill somewhere outside of the NovaCare.
Good.
The Commies don't have their starting quarterback. They shut him down for the year. They're overall not a good team. They're really just trying to play for a high draft pick. So you'd think the Eagles need one more win to secure the NFC East. First time we'd have back-to-back NFC East winners in 20 years, if I remember correctly, 21 years. So the Eagles definitely have more to play for. It should be like a two-score game at minimum.
Okay. Do we have a chance of being in the Super Bowl?
I won't be that delusional. If they can just win one playoff game, because the playoffs are going to end up going through LA in LA, who look like a juggernaut. They can win a playoff game, get to the NFC title game, lose to LA. I wouldn't be upset. But hey, if they want to go to the Super Bowl again, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
And where are we playing on Saturday? Home?
I think we are, because I know we play them twice in 3 weeks. I want to say tomorrow is... Saturday's at the... Saturday's in Maryland.
No, it's in Maryland.
Yeah,
okay.
It's at RFK Stadium.
That's a bummer because we're good at home. Max Crosby, Las Vegas All-Pro defensive end Max Crosby, talked about playing in Philadelphia for the first time last Sunday, and pointing out that our fans are the greatest. The energy we have is unbelievable. This is what he said. Cut 22.
Like, cities that really have like substance to them and like true fan bases and love for their city and the game, and like going to Philly, like you could feel that energy when you go there. Like, the whole, there was people everywhere downtown. We stayed right downtown in the thick of it. You know how Philly is. They're rowdy. They're crazy. They're flipping off the buses.
Just giving you the bird.
Yeah, they didn't give a damn about anything. And then we pull up. We're driving up to the stadium. And I low-key, like, I never do this. But, like, I was driving into Philly. And this is the first time I've ever played in Philly. So that's why I took some pictures. But I was driving and there's trees and just all white and just fans everywhere in the tailgate. And you could just see the stadium behind. And I took a couple dope ass pictures because it's like, this is my first time ever playing there. And it just, like, if you're true, like, if you love football, like, that's what you dream of as a kid, like playing in Philadelphia in December in a grimy ass environment. Like, that's exactly what you dream for. So I loved it.
See that? That's what I'm talking about, baby. That's what I'm talking about. Love that.
And Max Crosby's a great player. He's like one of the only shining stars on a terrible Las Vegas Raiders team.
Yeah, they're a pretty bad team. I mean, we blew them out, so.
First shutout since 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
First time in a month I haven't been depressed watching an Eagles game from start to finish.
Well, I just texted my son, Patrick. He said, we're going to win. Patrick Zioli said, we're going to win.
Well, then we just have to win because Patrick Zioli said
win.
So. Can't lie.
Patrick Zioli said so. There you go. See? So my son's. And then we have a game, what, the following Sunday at 4:25?
Yeah, Sunday the 28th in Buffalo, the last hard. That'll tell me how serious they're going to take the playoffs. Buffalo in Buffalo.
Buffalo and Buffalo. I feel like that's advantage Buffalo.
1,000%. They have the reigning MVP, Josh Allen. That'll really tell you. If you want to know how serious the Eagles are making a run, going back-to-back, that game against Buffalo is going to tell you where they're at.
Even though we beat Buffalo in the World Series. Super Bowl. Didn't we?
No, we beat Kansas City.
Right. I mean, but we beat Buffalo to get there, right?
No, Buffalo's in the AFC. No.
All right,
Kansas City beat Buffalo.
That's right. That's what I meant. But we beat the team that beat Buffalo. So,
no, yeah.
This is why I'll never do sports talk. Because, yeah, I can't. This is bad. It's probably just time to end the show. All right, Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla is up next. Tune in, and we'll see you tomorrow in Cape May, all right? 3 to 7 p.m., Grand Hotel of Cape May. Can't miss it. It's going to be a fun show, 3 to 7 p.m. Come for all of it. Come for a little bit. However you want to do it, just come and see us. It's our last show of the year, and I want to make sure you're there for that. We got some great guests lined up, and it's not going to be a show without you. So show up and join us tomorrow live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. I will see you there. Thank you.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.